Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham. In Somalia last week, Al-Shabaab banned school bells in one town. They've also forbid the broadcast of the BBC or Voice of America. The insurgent group has imposed harsh interpretations of Islam in large areas of the East African country. Letta Taylor is a researcher at Human Rights Watch, and she's the co-author of a report called Harsh War, Harsh Peace. It's about the abuses civilians in Somalia face under al-Shabaab, but also at the hands of government troops.
The crackdown on radios is just the latest example of the multitude of abuses that ordinary Somalis are facing in the vast swaths of the country that are controlled by al-Shabaab and its local administrators. We heard story after story from refugees of women being routinely flogged for simply wearing the wrong kind of abaya. This is a head-to-toe gown that is commonly worn among many Muslim women, but is certainly not mandatory in most parts of the Muslim world. We heard stories of women being flogged and jailed also for actions as simple as selling cups of tea to men because al-Shabaab does not want them engaged in any activity that brings them into contact with men in public. We heard stories of men being grabbed and their hair being shaved with broken bottles because al-Shabaab fighters did not like their haircuts. We heard of cell phones being smashed because al-Shabaab enforcers did not like the kind of music that was being used as a ringtone. These are the ways in which this organization has imposed draconian rules on the most minute details of daily life.
I understand that since Human Rights Watch last did reporting among Somali refugees, they've seen that al-Shabaab's influence has spread. So where are they now and how much control do they have of the country?
Al-Shabaab's control has spread dramatically in Somalia since late 2008. It controls more land than any other group in the country currently, and certainly far more than the transitional federal government, which is supported by the United States and the United Nations, which currently commands only a sliver of the capital, Mogadishu.
You also gathered audio from many of the refugees that you interviewed. One in particular was a woman in her 30s from Kismayo, a city that's controlled by Shabaab.
The woman I spoke to from Kismayo was a war widow, and she had, like many Somalis we spoke to, she was battered physically as well as emotionally from the years of conflict that have racked Somalia. She had shrapnel wounds in her head and her shoulder, and she explained that she had difficulty wearing the particularly bulky form of abaya that the Shabaab ordered women in Kismayo to wear because the heavy cloth hurt her shrapnel wounds. So one day she went to the market in her regular abaya. A group of al-Shabaab spotted her, grabbed her, and started flogging her. She explained to them that she was not wearing the abaya because she could not afford it and because the bulky cloth hurt her, but they didn't stop. It's not like this woman was wearing a miniskirt or a bikini to the market. She was dressed in clothes that most of the Muslim world would deem extremely conservative and modest. This is typical of what Shabaab is doing. Its measures are extreme even by very conservative interpretations of Islamic law.
What this woman said about the experience of not only being beaten by Shabaab and then, I think, detained by them, but also just the overall feeling that she had living in Kismayo. This is what she says. The women, the defenseless civilians, can't trade in the markets. Women can't walk around in the market. It's a place where people's hands and legs are amputated, where people have no freedom whatsoever. You cannot wear a simple dress in the market. We also heard from a 14-year-old boy who you interviewed who fled Mogadishu on his own. He says, I came home from school and got to my neighborhood. There was no one left there. My house was nothing but ashes. I fled Mogadishu with a bunch of strangers. I don't know what happened to my brothers and sisters. I think they were killed too. They were in a nearby shed across from the house.
We heard stories like that every day in the Dadaab refugee camps, and they were heartbreaking. This boy says he doesn't know which side killed his family, whether it was al-Shabaab or the U.S.-backed government forces or the U.N.-backed peacekeepers. What he told us, though, is that he fears all these sides equally. He says the attacks come in, we don't know who does it, all we know is the civilians suffer.
So, of course, the question is, Letta, what do we do? Somalia seems like such a far-off place, I think, for so many people. And we hear about the conflict there being intractable, going on forever. Tell us what can be done.
There's no easy solution to the conflict in Somalia. Nevertheless, the United States, Europe, the African Union, and the United Nations, among others, can take some first steps to address the gross abuses that the vast majority of people are suffering in Somalia. For starters, the United States should not provide any more weapons to the transitional federal government forces fighting in Somalia until it has guarantees that these forces will no longer use them to fire indiscriminately into civilian areas. The United Nations should put pressure on the African Union peacekeepers in Somalia to do the same. The United Nations should also set up a commission of inquiry to look into war crimes and other abuses in Somalia by all parties.
When you look at an insurgent group like al-Shabaab, how do we control a rebel group that's taking control of a country?
There's no easy answer to stopping al-Shabaab's abuses. But the United States, the UN, and other international actors can't simply provide unconditional support to federal government troops and international peacekeepers who are committing their own violations. This sends the message to the Somali people that the international community is indifferent to human life, and that makes them look just as bad in the eyes of the average Somali as al-Shabaab. Somalia is the quintessential failed state. There is no overnight fix to its problems. There are more than 500,000 people who have fled the country. More than 1.5 million people have been displaced internally. Half the population is in urgent need of food aid that groups such as the World Food Program can no longer deliver because it's too dangerous and groups such as al-Shabaab are hijacking shipments. So no one's going to fix this problem overnight. But what the United States, the United Nations, Europe, and other international actors need to do is focus on stability and respect for human rights within the country.
That was Letta Taylor. She's a researcher at Human Rights Watch. For more about our work on Somalia, please visit hrw.org. You can also see a multimedia feature we put together last year that includes testimony from Somalis who fled Mogadishu and beautiful photos by Marcus Bleasdale, a great photographer and frequent collaborator with Human Rights Watch. And speaking of our multimedia work, we've been nominated for a Webby. It's a high honor, and you can help us win a People's Voice Award by visiting webby.aol.com and voting for our video, In Silence. It's in the online film and video category under documentary individual episode. Sorry for the interruption, but we want your votes. This podcast is produced with help from Barrett Golding of Hearing Voices. It's available on iTunes and on our website. And now radio stations can download short versions of the show at prx.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.